every business function. If you were B2C and your goal was to help people with that B2C but in-person relationship, which was a lot of our initial clients,
yeah,
your business dissolved overnight.
Right. You had to restructure. All right, so where were you? So why don't you tell me a little bit about the agency and kind of how you came to be?
Yeah, so we started Thea Strategies about 5 years ago with the intention of becoming a marketing company to be that entire back office for someone who needed a marketing department.
Yeah.
In the process of doing that, we learned that a lot of customers' data and infrastructure was so noisy that they couldn't get to their end objectives.
Right.
So we ended up doing a lot of data cleanups, a lot of migrations, and implementing new systems for them, so that they could actually build a effective marketing strategy and campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They had a sales system over here that didn't know, the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing.
Right.
So it created a lot of challenges as far as building an effective marketing strategy and ultimately an effective growth strategy.
Mm-hmm. And so kind of how did things kind of shift for you, your agency, your customer base, and everything over the last few years, especially kind of heading into COVID and the shifts that happened around that? What did you see change within the kind of ecosystem?
I mean, COVID really upended how every business functioned. If you were B2C and your goal was to help people with that B2C but in-person relationship, which was a lot of our initial clients.
Yeah.
Your business dissolved overnight.
Right.
You had to restructure and figure out how to sell your business. And actually kind of brings up a case study that we have. We have a wedding photographer that we work in New York, and his competitor saw an 80% drop in traffic. Search was 80% down.
Hmm.
We tripled his business that year just because we paid attention to what were customers wanting. How did they want to interact with his information, and bringing in good data when they were coming in online. So we started tracking all of those metrics and building a really good data model.
Right.
And when you get to like the bigger scale clients, it ended up being you had marketing over here that was doing one thing and sales over here doing another. And we had this business function in the past, business analytics or business intelligence.
Right.
And that function was great, but what it didn't account for, what it didn't do, is have any authority to make decisions.
Right.
It didn't. The business analyst could say, hey, marketing, here's what's working, or sales, this is what's working, but they didn't work together, and there was no line up to leadership to make an effective change happen.
Right. They didn't have a seat at the table.
They didn't have a voice. They had nothing.
Right.
And now, I think the reason why we're seeing so much in RevOps and now AI of this data machine is we have to understand what's going on, and we're no longer in this space where we can wait and see.
Right.
AI overnight changed how quick we have to react. Quickly we have to react.
Right.
And if you don't have a good data model, if you don't know what your information is but across the entire business,
right,
you can't make an informed decision fast enough.
Mm.
And I kind of subscribe to there's kind of three different business models. You can either be an innovator, you can be a fast follower, or you can be a late adopter.
Okay.
An innovator, your startups, you're coming up with something that nobody's ever seen. AI is the innovator.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a fast follow, which is AI came out with this. How do I adopt it today? That's a lot of the people we're going to see here today, or this week at Inbound, is fast follow. A lot of the companies are smaller, they're able to move quickly, and they're not going to wait. And then you have the late adopters who wait until it's matured and it's in place.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the late adopters anymore. The Microsofts, those big companies, are saying, we need to be on this AI bandwagon now.
Right.
So we've lost this gap in the market to get things going.
Mm.
We really have to get everybody moving now. And if we don't move quick enough, you're going to lose your business. You're going to lose to the competitor because somebody else filled that gap before you decided.
Right. And you bring up a good point. So we're here at Inbound 2023. And so that brings up kind of the overall HubSpot ecosystem, and one that's obviously growing considerably. I think Over the last few years, HubSpot has done very well. And to me, it seems like there are more and more people who I think at one time would have, you know, kind of said there was only one CRM they would ever work with. And, but that are now kind of, there is a lot of those folks starting to move over into the HubSpot ecosystem. So from that perspective of, you know, revenue operations, business systems, kind of the data working, getting all the systems working together. In the work that you do, what are some of the challenges that you've seen with customers, and have you seen any ways in which HubSpot as a product and ecosystem has evolved to meet those needs?
Yeah, I mean, as far as like HubSpot goes, in the last several years, the depth of the platform that they've put in place has really made it a very strong competitor to a lot of the plugins that you would bolt into Salesforce.
Right.
And I mean, Salesforce is it's a sales tool. It's got it in the name. Everybody knows Salesforce. Everybody has to have Salesforce. And I don't say this saying Salesforce is going the way of the dinosaur, but it's a very old, clunky, heavy system.
Sure.
It does a lot that HubSpot can't today.
Mm-hmm.
But in 6 months, a year, in 5 years, Salesforce isn't as nimble as HubSpot is.
That's right.
And HubSpot's made a tremendous stride in the depth of the platform to where we have clients that we've pulled out most of their Salesforce tech stack.
Mm-hmm.
They maintain Salesforce for some data compliance issues and reasons, but the entire marketing services, the sales outreach functions, all of that is managed through HubSpot.
Right.
Because it's just more efficient for the team to use. I can train a team to use HubSpot in 5 weeks.
Right.
Get them up and running, and they're confident in the platform.
Yeah.
We've trained people in Salesforce, and at 5 weeks, people are still like, where do I go find this?
Right.
And that's not just my organization. Those are my peers as well, struggling with similar challenges.
Right.
And time to live, time to functional is 5 weeks with HubSpot.
Right.
And the cost of my onboarding services, which is marginal, where your time to live with Salesforce, how complicated do you want this to look?
Right.
You could be 6 months or a year before you stand up Salesforce.
Mm.
And so having platforms that are nimble and can adapt to your workforce, not only does that nimbleness that HubSpot offer give you the ability to adapt your business process, your pipelines, your sales motions, all of those things with a small team,
mm-hmm.
you can make changes quickly.
Right.
But Salesforce, Marketo, the big monsters, you need a dedicated team to make that happen, and it's going to take time.
Right. Yeah. And so I wanted to swing back to one of the things you mentioned. Obviously, AI is like a huge thing over the last however long. Obviously, it existed well before ChatGPT kind of blew on the scene. But I think for most non-techie people, myself included, I didn't really know what OpenAI was until November 2022, like a lot of people. You know, obviously AI is not only language models, right? I think the thing that people talk about is like ChatGPT as in large language models. But do you see the kind of openness that even today during Partner Day when the CEO talked, Yamini, they were laying out a very kind of clear AI strategy. But do you see kind of additional AI tools being involved in the work that, you know, the data processing, the data kind of?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty passionate about AI.
Yeah.
From the standpoint of like, we call it artificial intelligence.
Right.
In my mind, intelligence implies it has creativity. It can come up with something new.
Okay.
It's at its core, it's fuzzy logic, heuristics, and statistical analysis of data.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that be in the form of an image and creating custom graphics with Midjourney, data with OpenAI and ChatGPT or BART, or other systems that are doing it in the healthcare space, and maybe the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
The technology behind that's been around actually since Alan Turing invented the first computer.
Right.
He came up with this process. We just now have the ability to process the data. That's a long-winded way of saying AI has been here forever. We're just getting much more effective with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the risk that I see coming to market.
Right.
It's a risk reward. No, Skynet's not coming to kill us and anything like that. But
it's a different podcast. Yeah.
That being said, it is going to change how everybody gets everything done.
Yes.
You are no longer going to be able to be an A player, B player, or C player. AI is going to take the B and C jobs.
Yeah.
The A players are going to be able to plug data in and get information out. So they don't need the researchers, the base knowledge gathering skill that typically you would have.
Yes.
So a good example would be like a paralegal and a lawyer. The lawyer is the artist that's going to go argue the case. The paralegal is going to go do all the research.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the paralegal is not going to be necessary.
Right.
But like the state of New York just passed a thing, or some state, I forget. A lawyer submitted a brief that was completely done by AI. Reference legal cases that didn't even exist. Yeah. You're still going to need someone with that creativity and that knowledge to know what's real and not.
Yeah.
But it's going to change how we work.
Yeah.
And every interaction you have, you're going to be questioning. Like today, we get emails. Half the emails we send are from a workflow or an automation or some recipe that does it without human intervention.
Yes.
We're now going to be questioning, was this written by a human?
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know, I'm already there. I don't know about you, but there are certain tells I have already that
And when you get good at finding them,
it says in summary or something like that, I'm like, I know that that's a tell.
Or like the images, if the shadow's off.
Or like extra fingers.
Yeah. I mean, the AI and the images. But that's today. These are still in their infancy.
Yeah.
Think about the growth they've had. I mean, the language models, these machine learning algorithms really kind of started at, say, 5 or 10 years ago. And like their machine learning is what they were called when I was in engineering.
Right.
Now they're AI.
Right.
Where are they going to be in 5 years? I mean, I forget there's a concept, Asimov's thing or somebody, I forget, of technology doubles every time it improves.
Well, there's the, what's his name? The guy from the chips.
The Intel dude.
Yeah. But I think what you're talking about is it's an even faster kind of model, but.
Yeah, it grows so much faster than even tech development.
Right.
Because we don't need the time to build infrastructure to manufacture.
Right.
It's a few lines of code and tweaking and learning.
Right. So I guess my question is more along the lines of predictive analytics and how that plays into, because I guess that would fall under machine
learning. I would call that AI, yeah.
It would fall, yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, I don't think that has hit the kind of mainstream the way, you know, ChatGPT and generative AI and language models has become kind of in the mainstream discussion. But do you think that that's coming from the data perspective?
I don't think it couldn't.
Right.
I mean, I hate to pull like Hollywood references, but think about every movie that's sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
The computer's telling you something's failed in your system, in your spaceship, your communicator, something.
Right.
That's statistical analysis of information.
Mm-hmm.
We're not far off of that. And really, as humans, those data analysts I talked about in the beginning that created RevOps.
Right.
They're going to become the AI masters.
Right.
They're going to feed the machine the information to create those answers, those responses.
Mm-hmm.
And until we, there's a grappling here of ethics as well.
How's that?
Okay. Individuals have Tesla, self-driving car.
Yes.
And there's TED Talks.
Individuals here.
TED Talks and things that go down this over and over again. What is the value of a human life?
Right. So you're basically playing out a philosophical debate that has been going on for centuries and letting a machine make the decision of which the trolley car problem.
Exactly.
Over and over and over again.
But now we're leaving that to a computer to make that calculation.
Right.
And we're feeding information to it.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did people decide to pull that button away and say, you or I hit the red button to shut down the system?
Right.
When do we pull that away? And at what point? It's going to start in our world. It's going to start with marketing and sales.
Mm.
The marketer's going to say, it's good enough. Let it go.
Yeah.
We move quick. We don't. The repercussions of a failure in our space are very, very minor.
Yeah.
You hit engineering, you hit self-driving cars, you hit these more complicated systems.
Right.
The repercussion of a failure is much more significant.
Mm-hmm.
And so defining how we use these in our world,
mm-hmm.
creating that environment that we can utilize them safely and effectively and not compromise.
Do you see, like, okay, so obviously, like you said, say in the sales and marketing perspective, using AI the wrong way is probably not going to cause, you know, all the nukes to be fired or whatever.
Yeah, no war game movies.
Right, yeah. Yeah. There's no thermonuclear warfare happening as a result of sending a completely automated workflow. But do you see a hesitancy in a lot of people, or maybe even just kind of like kind of waving it off as, oh, just another trend? And
I mean, I can tell you from my internal staff, there is a hesitancy.
Yeah.
I have some staff that will use AI models to help them do their job more effectively.
Yeah.
And they're bought and sold on.
Mm-hmm.
I have other staff that up and quit when we said, you need to use this.
Wow.
Because they were so strongly polarized against the fact that it could take their job.
Well, yeah. I think, you know.
But yeah, I mean, that's the challenge.
I think that's playing out. Those kind of two things are playing out a lot. And I would imagine, I haven't really had the chance to check the pulse of the audience in the event, but I suspect there's that dichotomy is playing out at scale.
Well, I mean, that partner today, we had Jen Jeeves, I forgot, Jasper. Jasper, they were talking and they make a generative AI platform.
Yes.
They made it, she put it very succinctly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have original thought? If you don't have original thought, AI is going to take what you have. If you have original thought.
It's a deep question. Do any of us have original thought, or are we just kind of regurgitating a collection of our inputs?
Fair, but that still provides an opinion.
Yeah.
And what I think she said best of the whole thing was, it raises our value as a human. If you are an original thinker, you want to do, your value, your stock goes up.
Yes.
Because AI can't do that.
Yeah.
If you don't have original thought, then you've got to figure out, are you the person that fixes the robot? Or are you the person that sits on your couch because the robot took your job?
Or you get plugged into the matrix and you're...
Well, I'm thinking power of like manufacturing robots. Like, yeah. That took the auto workers like tons of their jobs away.
But it
facilitated tons of other new jobs.
Right, that's the argument, right? That even if it takes away some jobs, additional new jobs that we can't even really fathom will become...
And so like, we don't know what AI is going to create.
Right.
That we're at such an infancy of AI.
Yeah.
That we don't know what it's going to create. And kind of going back to like the beginning of the conversation, that data piece.
Yeah.
We're stewards of this machine right now.
Right.
The data that we feed it is what it learns to create its predictions.
Right.
If we feed it garbage, we're going to get Skynet.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of garbage that I'm sure it's been fed.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Yeah. But if we only feed it gems,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to sound real.
Right.
So we have to feed it both. We just need to figure out how to help it learn what's a gem and what's garbage.
Mm.
Because my kids have used it and it's asked questions about different science facts for school. I'm a science nerd. I've read the facts. I'm like, that's wrong. That's a lie.
Right. It tells lies very well.
But they didn't know that.
Right, exactly.
And so we got to figure out how to go from 4, which will lie to us where we believe it very, very well, to 5 or 10 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's truthful.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting. It wasn't the direction I expected the conversation to go, but I suspect it would be the direction that most conversations go this week, because it's kind of blown up everyone's world over the last few months, 6 months, a year.
And to kind of go like back to the point you started earlier when we started this, like in the pre-roll.
Yeah.
How does this influence RevOps? Yeah. How does this influence the revenue, the structure of your business?
Yeah.
It's going to be that core data architecture. Making sure you have good information is going to be the initial backbone of any AI that is layered on top of it.
Right. I think in her message today, Yamini was talking about their AI, and she said content, context, and customer
yep.
were part of their, right? And so the context, right? Context is the data that the AI uses as its baseline, right?
Yeah.
If I'm using you know, like you said, garbage in, garbage out. So it's like the infrastructure, the data that you feed it is going to be, you know, it's only, the output is only going to be as good as what you set up.
Yeah. And like, so there is that side, but you also asked around like data analytics and reporting and making preemptive decisions.
Mm-hmm.
That information coming in is going to help RevOps. What is this leading indicator? Do I have enough deals in my pipeline? Am I doing what I need to do to generate effective business?
Yeah.
Or am I not? You're going to have those indicators.
Right.
But if you have one deal a year, you're going to get garbage.
Right.
1 point doesn't make a line. If you have 100 points a year, maybe you're getting enough data to have a meaningful output.
Right.
We have yet to find what is that threshold of data in to mean that we're getting quality out.
Like what's the standard?
Minimum viable.
Yeah, like the sample size that's big enough to create a...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I guess to kind of wrap things up, I wanted to ask about like what you're looking forward to most. I'm pointing over there because I think that's the way the Boston Convention Center.
Right down there.
So the next few days, what are some of the speakers as well as like events that you're looking forward to the most?
Really, I like the keynote speakers and what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm kind of privileged this year. I've got a booth and it's going to be right by the stage.
Oh, wow.
So I get to see both speakers and our data partner that we're actually sharing a booth with, Syncery.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of helping champion this AI data quality integration of your tech stack.
Yeah.
So you kind of get to be in the driver's seat of helping like decide what is that ethical decision.
Interesting.
And then also hear what the other like thought leaders in the space are going for.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm very much looking forward to just kind of getting, I can kind of take a pulse check on the way people are feeling about some of the conversations we're having here just by based on kind of seeing online discussions, but I am actually interested to see how much of that dichotomy we were talking about plays out in real life over the next few days.
I'm going to find out tomorrow. I mean, I'm by the stage and our banner says AI, get ready for the future.
Yeah.
So
at our booth, we have a booth as well, and we're doing some games where you get to spin some stuff and you win a prize, but maybe we'll do a drinking game where every time someone says AI, you have to drink.
Well, I think we'd never leave the convention center.
Well, I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
This was awesome.